Okay, so I'm going to switch gears and really talk about on-the-ground implementation of a behavioral health program in primary care at an integrated healthcare system, Kaiser Permanente, in Colorado. And what we did is we tried to implement ESPRT, the screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment process in primary care. And I'm going to talk about how we did that. So I have nothing to disclose. What I'm going to do is talk to you today a little bit about ESPRT and then what we did as far as trying to implement it at Kaiser, Colorado, our feasibility work and our pilot implementation work and our next steps. So as Hal mentioned, ESPRT stands for Screening, Brief Intervention, Referral to Treatment. It makes a lot of sense. It requires a little time. It's been well-researched. It's evidence-based. So it should fit in with our care model very well because we do like evidence-based information at Kaiser. And it also is important to note that it does target those at-risk people through the brief intervention to prevent them from moving on to substance abuse categories, although it can identify those who do need a referral to treatment as well. So what we did at Kaiser Colorado is we were contracted by SAMHSA through their other agencies to do some pilot work first to determine the feasibility of implementing ESPRT within primary care at Kaiser Colorado and then to implement that in a pilot clinic and then to look into partnering with other institutions and determining the feasibility there for the idea that we should be able to further disseminate what we learn and how we learned how to do it into other healthcare systems. I do want to point out that these are not really research studies. This is all really quality improvement on the ground implementation in the real world. We're not doing any randomized controlled trials or anything like that. We're not researching how effective ESPRT is in primary care. We're looking at, can we implement it? Can we get it into primary care as part of standard of care? So we started with the feasibility work, and we did that by interviewing and doing focus groups with our main stakeholder groups, including our members. So we talked to both our Spanish and English-speaking members, our integrated behavioral health group, which includes mental health providers, chemical dependency, as well as behavioral medicine specialists, who are trained clinical psychologists and counselors who are actually located in primary care. And then we talked to our primary care providers, our physicians, our nurse managers, and our frontline nursing staff. The members themselves were very open to the ESPRT process. They liked the idea that Kaiser was concerned enough to screen for substance use. One of the things we actually found was the inherent informational and educational value of the pre-screen questions themselves. My favorite quotes from one of the participants is, "Wow, this would have been great. 6 drinks. I'm just getting started." A lot of them talked about how nice it would have been to know what those healthy drinking limits were. And then when we talked to our nurses and nurse managers, they all, in theory, supported ESPRT. They thought it fit very well with our processes. They did, of course, want to still know about the validity of it. They felt it fit well with our workflow. In fact, we've done a lot of work already with tobacco screening. Over the past decade at Kaiser Colorado, every person is asked whether they smoke, and if they smoke, if they're ready to quit, and if they're ready to quit, would they like a referral to the quit line? And then that referral is provided through a letter that is faxed to the quit line so that the quit line can actually call the patient. So that process has been well ingrained in our culture, and it's very similar to at least the screening process of ESPRT. So they all thought that it fit very well within the scope of practice, could happen in the rooming process. The patients could be asked if they have utilized alcohol or other substances. They've also been looking at using the PHQ-9 to assess for depression. We've talked about physical activity as a vital sign. So it seemed to fit well with the process. The only concern we had from the nurses is that they get about 6 to 8 minutes to room the patient within that 20-minute visit, and the more questions we keep asking them to put in that 6 to 8 minutes, the more they run the risk of running over into the doctor's time, which causes problems too. They also felt, the nurse managers especially, were very protective of their staff and their the nurse's scope of practice as well as liability concerns. So they felt the screening did fall very well into the nurse's scope of practice, but really felt that the brief intervention and referral to treatment really belonged with the doctors or the behavioral medicine specialists. Our physicians also were very supportive of it intellectually. They thought it's important to screen, that we do need to catch those at-risk users, and also questioned the validity of ESPRT. Again, is why is this better than what I already do, which is just using my clinical judgment to identify these people. They were also very concerned about their time, their competing demands. They've got a 20-minute visit, and if I start talking to a patient about their substance use, am I going to use up my entire 20 minutes, and how do I prevent that from happening? They were concerned about their motivational interviewing skills because the brief intervention part of ESPRT is based on motivational interviewing, and they really also thought that maybe the BMS was a better person to do this. They were also very protective of their patients. They were concerned about, well, what about patient resistance? I think my patients might not want to talk to me about their substance use, especially if they're at risk users. And what does it mean if I put that I screened for substance use in their medical record? Is that going to harm them or prevent them from getting insurance in some way? When we talked to our mental health, our behavioral health services, which are integrated at Kaiser Colorado, we found that they are three very distinct departments that don't necessarily talk to each other or talk to primary care. So while we are technically integrated, there still are some barriers to access within them, and that our primary care providers typically refer either to mental health or to the behavioral medicine specialist. They don't really refer directly to chemical dependency. But we also determine, because the behavioral medicine specialists are kind of, they have their foot in both worlds. They're located in primary care. They work closely with the primary care providers. But they have the expertise to really assess the patients and get them appropriately to either chemical dependency or mental health. If they do need the referral to treatment services, that the BMSs might be the appropriate person for the brief intervention and the referral to treatment. And everybody, all the stakeholder groups of mental health and primary care seemed to think this was the best idea for moving forward. So we did figure out that it's feasible, we could move forward. They suggested we get high-level leadership involvement, of course, to make sure that it could be sustained, because nobody wants to implement something in primary care that's going to be then yanked away when it's over. So we needed that high-level support. They all recommended that we partner with one of these other initiatives going on, such as physical activity as a vital sign or something. And because of, again, wanting to put these questions in the rooming process, that the staff really needed to take ownership of that workflow and tell us how the workflow needed to work instead of us coming in and saying, this is what you're going to do. So we moved forward and we just found a clinic that was willing to implement ESPRT over a 3-month trial period, using the BMSs as the model. So screening would be done by the clinic staff, and then positive screens would go on to the behavioral medicine specialist for the brief intervention and referral to treatment. We used a whole bunch of measures to assess how the implementation worked. One thing I do want to point out here is that we offered maintenance of certification credits to our primary care providers, sort of as a carrot to really engage them and get them involved in that quality improvement process. None of them took us up on this opportunity, so it wasn't really the carrot that we were expecting it to be. That's not to say that at the end of the year, when they're required to submit their paperwork, they won't be coming back to us and saying, I need that information from ESPRT so I can submit it for my maintenance of certification. But it didn't really do anything during the implementation process to really get them moving. They just thought, yeah, that's nice, thank you very much. And then the other thing that happened is, of course, reality set in when we started to implement. The high-level leadership support that was suggested, the leadership said, yes, we support it in theory, but we want to see what happens in a clinic before we actually give this our full go-ahead for region-wide implementation. When we looked at partnering with some of the other initiatives, some were working more as research projects, and we were told, no, you might screw up our research project if you partner with us. The physical activity as a vital sign had sort of lost their momentum and had gone to just a grassroots effort, so providers were told that they could do it if they wanted to, but they didn't have to, which meant most of them weren't. So we would have to start from scratch, implementing at a clinic level to implement ESPRT on our own without partnering with anybody. It was also suggested again that the stakeholders help us create the workflow. Well, they didn't want to create it from scratch. They wanted us to come in and give them options, and then they would pick and choose and tell us what would work amongst those options. And so what they started with, and they actually ignored for the screening part, they ignored the options and told us what they wanted to do. But they liked the BMS model for the brief intervention and referral to treatment. So they decided that jumping in and having the nurses do the screening during the rooming process was like jumping in head first, and they were a little scared of that, and they just wanted to dip their toe in the water. So they decided that they would only screen health maintenance visits for people ages 19 to 64, that it would be done on paper, a paper pre-screen given out by the receptionist at the clinic. If the patient then came back positive, the receptionist would give them the CAGE or the audit or the DAST screener as appropriate, and send them on to the behavioral medicine specialist if they were positive. They also wanted to change the questions, the typical ESPRT pre-screen questions, to yes-no questions to make it easier for the receptionist to score. And because we intended this to be a rapid cycle improvement process, we decided that we could go ahead and let them do that so they could experience why that might not work. you know, kind of like the love and logic approach to clinic implementation. And so we also, again, as part of this process, we had multiple visits to the clinic by our staff to see how it was going, make sure we were a very upfront presence to help them. We had frequent follow-up visits with our BMS, with the clinic chief, with the reception staff, as well as the nurse manager, who really just wanted to sit back and see what happened. But we did try to engage her more in the process. We ended up changing those the pre-screen questions, because what they initially requested was scripting for the receptionist to be able to give these paper pre-screeners to the patients. And what was happening after the first bit of implementation was that the receptionists were feeling a lot of patient resistance. Some of them may have been uncomfortable themselves with handing out the screener. But because of that patient resistance, we decided to put the text on top of the pre-screen, change the questions from these very leading yes-no questions that were kind of like, you don't have more than six drinks, do you? to the more open end, how often do you have more than six drinks, or the healthy drinking limits? And that helped a little bit. And then really worked with the reception on staff on how to score those. So what I want to show with this is just some of our data, in that basically we had the same number of similar number of health maintenance visits during implementation as we had during the 3 months prior, about the same number of folks who actually had a diagnosis in their chart of substance abuse. But you can see we only had 321 people who actually went through the full ESPRT screening process, so it only worked in about a third of the patients. 15 did go on to the behavioral medicine specialist. That process worked really, really well. It was just this pre-screen process, the screening portion, that was still problematic. And what I want to say about the audit and the CAGE, these zeros, they don't mean that they weren't done. We do have an audit and CAGE questionnaires programmed into our electronic medical record so that we could actually see the data and we could see what patients answered. The only problem is most clinics do this on paper, and so it's up to somebody to then go and enter it via the questionnaire into the medical record, so that's clearly very rarely happening. But it doesn't mean that they're not getting done. So we also did some exit interviews and staff surveys in that to figure out what else was going on in the process, and what did the clinic learn as they were implementing this, and what do they want to change to sustain it. And really they felt that it highlighted the behavioral medicine specialist as a really integrated part of their primary care process, and they really learned how to utilize her and her resources. Mm-hmm. And the providers liked that it gave them an opening for that substance use conversation that they didn't have before. They did discover, of course, the barriers of their competing demands. What happened as soon as we got in the clinic and started implementing was that the clinic underwent a total restructuring. So new reality set in. Now instead of one nurse per one provider, we have one nurse per two providers, and the whole structure just changed. But they managed to work through that process, and those kind of things just happen all the time in our clinics. And so we can't control that. All we can do is help the clinics manage to implement despite what's going on. What they really found was that the paper pre-screen really highlighted for them that it interfered with their they lost their communication process. They realized they really liked that information in the medical record, and without it in there, they didn't know that these screens weren't happening. The primary care providers were assuming everybody was being screened because that was the process, but because it wasn't getting entered into the medical record, they didn't know that. Only a third of the people were getting screened. So that was one of the things that was really eye-opening for them and really helped them see what they needed to do to sustain this going forward. They also responded also to that patient resistance to the screening process and thinking that maybe reception is not appropriate and it really should fit with the nurses and the rooming process where we originally found that it should fit. So going forward, the clinic really thought that, yes, we can keep this going. We're going to move it into the rooming process where it really belongs. And they really noted that they need to use the EMR. So they're going to start putting those processes in place so that they can show that the people are getting screened and the doctors know that the people are getting screened. And so that's really a good thing, that they're going to change their workflow process there. They also did admit that they maybe need a little bit more training on what ESPRT is and how important it is to identify these at-risk populations versus one of the things that they wanted to do was maybe target a higher-risk population so we could get more people who are really supposed to be referred to treatment. But again, ESPRT is really to target those at-risk people. So there's still some talk around what we need to do and where they want to focus on which side of the coin. So that clinic is going to keep going. We are going to help that clinic as much as possible, even though that contract is now over and it's really in their hands. We're going to do what we can to facilitate them moving forward, sustaining it, so that we can then take that to leadership to promote system-wide dissemination of this into our standard of care process. And the final step now that we've just started is working with other healthcare organizations like Kaiser Integrated Healthcare Organizations to determine the feasibility of implementing ESPRT in their systems and facilitate them figuring that out and how that might work in their systems. And again, that's just started, so I don't have any data on that or anything, but that's our next steps. And I do just want to thank my terrific study team that helps us do all this implementation work. And that's my part. Hopefully I've not gone over time.
Very good.